The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Are you a first-time listener? If so, I hope you'll glean something beneficial from this broadcast and share it with somebody else. Are you a regular listener? Then bless you for your support and interest. Let me know, what do you like and what do you not like? My show is based on the Wheel of Life. Go to my resource library at www.thedrmelanieshow.com and download the Prayer Wheel. Today we're focusing on the mental, emotional, and physical aspects of our lives as it relates to pain and sleep. Do you experience pain or insomnia due to pain like I do? Then you definitely understand the impact that pain can have on your sleep and the impact that lack of sleep can have on your pain. Well, today's show is sponsored by the Interstitial Cystitis Association. They're a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to improving the quality of healthcare and for the lives of the people who have IC or pelvic pain. They provide advocacy, research funding, and education to ensure a speedy diagnosis and the best care with dignity for people that are affected by this condition. Did you know it affects more than 4 million Americans of all ages, genders, races, and ethnicities? My first guest is Linda Salen, who works with the ICA, and she has this condition. She's going to talk to us about how she copes and manages to work, and she has a podcast, which she'll tell us about. My second guest is Elise Panzera. She has her doctorate in nursing. She's going to tell us about her research concerning sleep disruption and IC symptoms in women. She'll explain the reason they only studied women. Let's first listen to my interview with Linda Salen. Well, today we're talking to Linda Salen, who is part of the ICA, and she has had a long history of working with them and also her own personal journey. So welcome, Linda.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Well, I'm glad. You've done so much to help other people. It was time to get you highlighted.
Well, thanks.
So you have been diagnosed since 1989, long time.
Long time, that's right.
So how has, since you've been diagnosed, how has your life been impacted?
It was a very difficult first 6 years for me. I had a lot of support from a few of my family members and a lot of friends. They actually, although they didn't know what IC was, they were very understanding of what I was going through. In fact, my neighbor across the street told me that her mother had this horrible bladder disease, and it was called interstitial cystitis, and I said to her, well, that's what I have, because she knew I was ill and wasn't sure what it was. So a lot of my friends rallied around me. My children were very young. They were in grade school. But they knew something was wrong with me, and they knew I had a lot of problems and had to go to the bathroom a lot, and they were as kind and supportive as they could be at that age.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, the standard of care was to use one therapy at a time. Then if that didn't work, they stopped that, and then they tried something else, and there was very little they could do. They did bladder installations. They had Elmeron in compassionate use. Mm-hmm. They had a few things like Elavil, a couple of the tricyclics. That's about it.
Right.
So for 6 years, really, that's all I did, and there were a couple of anticholinergics like Ditropan was on the market.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got to a pain doctor who said to me, Linda, you have more than one symptom, you're going to the bathroom a lot, you're in pain, and you're not sleeping, we have to really hit you with everything we can, then things quickly got better at that point. And I think now things are much better because we do realize that multiple symptoms require multiple therapy. Mm-hmm. But at that time, nobody knew that.
So how did you get to this pain specialist? Did you have to be referred?
I did have to be referred, and that holds true today even more so. You must be referred to a pain specialist, but it can be from any physician. It can be from your family doctor. It can be from your urologist. It can be from a gynecologist. Any doctor can refer you to a pain management physician.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very nice urologist. He was very kind. He was very sympathetic. He even gave me pain medication.
Hmm.
But
back when you could.
Things to do.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. He ran out of things to do. And finally he said to me, I have a colleague who's a pain specialist and I just think you ought to see her.
Mm.
So finally we did that. I had been to 7 urologists by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't uneducated in IC. I had run a support group. I knew a lot of things, but one of the things I didn't realize that was that I was in pain.
Yes.
And I heard Dr. Brookoff speak, and when he described what pain was, I realized suddenly after 6 years that I was in pain because he described it as a pressure sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And my mind just kind of, light bulbs went off, and I said, well, that's me.
Yeah.
And to this day, I think there's a lot of people out there who don't understand they are in pain. And it's okay to go get treated for pain.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when he was at one of our ICA conferences and he said to the audience, I see your pain. And the whole attendees there were in tears because no one had ever acknowledged that they could see our pain.
And within 3 weeks of taking medication appropriate for my pain, and it wasn't even an opioid, it was a different kind of medication, I went back to the urologist, and he looked at me, and he said, I don't see pain on your face today.
Wow.
He said, you look like you are not in pain, you look 10 years younger, and you look like you're happy today, and this is the first time in 6 years I've been treating you that you look good, and I don't see pain on your face.
Yeah,
and he was as happy as I was.
Right. We don't know until there's the absence of what we've grown accustomed to. And then you know how bad it was.
That's right. And pain had become the normal for me. And I had a hard time dealing with the fact that I could live a life free of pain and pretty much of a more normal life. I had a hard time emotionally adjusting to that because I was used to being in pain and I was used to running to the bathroom. And I had a friend who had IC and she said to me one day, you deserve this, and you need to get used to the fact that you're not going to go back, you're going to go forward, and you need to be aware of this and go ahead and let yourself live a more normal life there and embrace it and be
mm-hmm.
happy with it.
Yeah. Well, I remember, like you, I was a support group leader, and doctors would say to me, we don't want our patients to go to support group meetings because then they tend to show up with symptoms they didn't have before. They're getting them the suggestion from other people. And I'm going, no, that's not the case. They already had them. They just didn't know that that was connected. So what's been your experience with support groups?
Well, one of my urologists told me, don't go to a support group. It'll just drag you down. And
uh-huh.
that wasn't true. I think it depends on the support group.
Yes.
I've known support groups that have done that. The support group that we had was wonderful because we had speakers all the time. We had doctors. We had pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
We had physical therapists. We made people aware of what the latest therapies were, how good the ICA is. And we brought them up. We let them talk amongst each other, and I think everybody left with a smile on their face. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make people aware of what they're going through and embrace each other and you know, leave with friendships made and support being given. And if you just sit there and moan and groan about it, that doesn't accomplish anything. You can't let anybody take over the group and just, you can't make it a pity party. And
Correct. That's
the danger with some of the groups.
Mm-hmm. And when new people would come to the group, they had so many questions. And they thought they were going to die. And you'd say, no, you're not going to die. You're going to learn to live with this. Oh, no, I can't. Well, yes, you can. Listen to the other people in the group. You'll see how they have learned to live a full and productive life. And after a time, those new people would become the veterans, and they would help the new ones coming in.
That's true. And I think what's taken the place of support groups now is the Internet.
Yes.
Some of the message boards, some of the better message boards, some of, like the ICA has a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that all the time, that the older people, not the older in age, but the veterans on the Facebook page welcome the new people coming in and counsel them. And I think it's wonderful.
Yes.
The other thing that I wanted to say is in the last 22 years, of course, no one would choose to have IC.
Right.
But you have to educate yourself. And I think what I did was I changed career paths. And I was planning on going back to school. I couldn't do that. But I made something good out of something bad.
Mm-hmm. And you started volunteering.
I started volunteering, and then it led to a change in career. It led to a job with the ICA that I continue to this day, and I'm fortunate enough to work out of my home.
Mm-hmm. That is very helpful for those of us who have IC, because
yes.
we have unpredictable bodies that are going to
yes.
say, you think you're going somewhere today? No, you're not.
Yes. That's true.
So
I can remember one incident where friends wanted to go out to dinner, and this was when I was really bad, and it involved crossing, going on a bridge that crossed a body of water.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely refused to go because
uh-huh.
I envisioned a flat tire or something
yes.
on the bridge.
Yes.
And I said, I don't care where we go, but it's going to be on this side of the bay.
Uh-huh.
And where there's a place to stop if I have to go to the bathroom. And they agreed. They knew what the situation was, so they agreed.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you had support because, you know, people would say to me, oh, you just are nervous. You just need to calm down. You're too anxious. It's like, really?
You know, nobody ever said that to me. I don't know what it was, but no one, even doctors, never said that to me. They have always taken me seriously. My friends have always taken me seriously. They always understood. In fact, one year for the holidays, my niece sent me a female urinal.
Ah.
And on the package, she wrote, Mary Tishmas.
Oh, I like that.
And I still have it.
Great. We need to take a break right now, but when we come back, we're going to continue with this conversation, okay?
All right.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Taking care of yourself should not be complicated. The process of restoring your health can be simple, easy, and enjoyable by making a few small changes one at a time. That's the principle behind From the Inside Out with your host, Dr. Rhonda Nelson. If you're looking for a simple way to improve your health, we'll provide the motivation, encouragement, and information about how to restore optimal health one step at a time and from the inside out. Tune in every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Join classical homeopath Piper Martin to discover an entirely new way to experience pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. Educate yourself and connect with the possibilities of new choices and opportunities for you and your baby. Learn to use homeopathy to support yourself and your baby both physically and emotionally. We'll also discuss topics specific to all women, such as understanding and accepting our bodies, relating to other women, and how to expand out of your comfort zone and discover new and powerful concepts. Tune in to The Whole Woman, Thursdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today's episode is sponsored by the Interstitial Cystitis Association. To get more information, go to www.ichelp.org. Today we're talking with Linda Salen from the ICA, who is one of their employees. She's talking to us about how she became involved in the organization dealing with her own IC. So let's return to the second part of that interview.
Okay. So we're back here with Linda Salen from the ICA talking about how she's learned to cope with her IC and her journey to be able to lead a productive life. So when you started volunteering, doing support group things and then volunteering with the ICA whole organization, did you have any experience doing that before that time period?
When I was a teenager, I volunteered at the local hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when my daughters were in their grade school and junior high, they were Brownies and Girl Scouts, and I always was one of the moms who helped out with those kinds of projects and helped out at school and that sort of thing. So I had that kind of experience, and I knew the value of volunteering, so I was, you know, one of the first ones to step up and help the support group leader. And then when she moved, I took over the group for 5 years.
Oh, that's a long time when you're doing that kind of work.
Yes, and I really just at that point needed to stop being the group leader because I had three jobs. I was working for the ICA, and I was doing medical transcription for the Department of Pediatric Genetics at the university and for two doctors in private practice. And I just couldn't do it anymore, but no one wanted to take over the group until a couple years later when a good friend of mine took over the group finally and revived it. But I just couldn't continue the group at that time, so I had to drop it.
And that's really hard because I had started a number of support groups in South Carolina and was helping to coordinate state coordinators for a number of states, and I just got burnt out. And I didn't want to let it go, but either somebody else had to take it over or it wasn't going to be. So you're right.
I think it's at some point in time you have to step back and somebody else has to take over.
Yes.
And if it's not going to happen, then you just have to leave it go because it's somebody else's turn to do it.
That's right. It's time to move on to something else.
Exactly. And if you're burned out, you're not going to do anybody any good.
No, that's true. So what does your job entail working with the Interstitial Cystitis Association?
It's constantly changing. What I did 15 years ago and 10 years ago is a little bit different now.
Okay.
We used to have national conferences and regional conferences, and we used to tape record those, and I started out by offering to transcribe those for free.
Okay.
But we don't tape them anymore because in this day and age we have live webcasts.
Right.
So I used to write articles for the we had a newsletter when I was a support group leader, and I used to help out with the state when we had a state coordinator. I used to help out with that newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And I just do a little bit of everything from ordering ICA pens and bags to if we go to a conference, I take charge of the exhibit booth, and I've spoken to doctors. I've spoken to nurses. I've gone to all kinds of medical conferences. I've gone to doctors' offices locally. I've spoken at support group meetings. I've done internet radio like I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. I've done newspaper interviews, helped write articles for the ICA. And there's so many behind-the-scene duties that are so necessary to help run a nonprofit organization that the general public doesn't realize have to be done.
Right, yes.
I had never really done any type of public speaking or anything like this when I was younger. And at this point in my life, I would have absolutely no hesitation speaking to anyone about IC and even my own personal experiences.
That's good. That's good. How do you keep everything going? I mean, with having IC and all these many facets of things you handle related to the work, how do you do that?
Sometimes you just have to stop and ask for help.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes.
You have to step back and you have to say, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't keep this going at this level. It's hard every day to hear from people who are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it is every day, many times a day. And at some point in time, you just can't help them like you know that you need to.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of problems. They don't have insurance. They can't get good health care. The doctors are still doing things that should not have ever been done, and certainly in this day and age should not be done, but they're still being done.
Yeah, painful
and
procedures, yeah.
Yes, and one or two or three or four people cannot put a stop to this. And patients have to be told that these things are inappropriate, and they have to become empowered on their own to put a stop to this.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, some people just can't. I can't help somebody get health care if they can't afford it. I can't do that. I'm one person. We're a small organization. We have funding problems, as all nonprofits do right now.
Yes.
And we, you know, we need help from a lot of people. So you can't take the world on your shoulders. You just have to realize that and do what you can to the best of your ability.
And refer them
and
to other places that might have the resources they're looking for.
That's true, but there's not many resources right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult time in this country's history to get what people need done. It's
right.
Very, very hard.
But, you know, if people have enough medical documentation, and that's the problem, if they don't have insurance, you can apply for Social Security disability, and it might take you 2 years.
Yes, it might take you 2 years to even get your paperwork looked at now.
Yes, yes.
That's the problem.
Yes.
It's a real problem if someone's alone and not married.
Yes.
It's difficult. But we do have a wonderful volunteer who helps people who are applying for disability or in the process or thinking about it. And they can certainly write to us at ICAMAIL@ICHELP.org.
Okay.
And we'll put them in touch with Catherine, and she can guide them through the process a little bit.
Great.
And help them. But it's a long process now because there's a lot of people trying to get disability.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that can be done. Patient empowerment and patient education is even more necessary now than it ever was in the past.
And it needs to be a team approach. And doctors, healthcare practitioners aren't willing to always do the team approach, but you have to treat more than just the IC.
Yes, it's so necessary, and it can't be said enough that you have things wrong with you that are occurring in other places than the bladder.
Right.
And you may need to see a pain doctor to get nerve pain treated, or a neurologist, or a rheumatologist if you have something else like maybe fibromyalgia,
mm-hmm.
or arthritis. And you have to take it upon yourself to get to these other healthcare professionals,
mm-hmm.
or physical therapy for the pelvic muscles.
Right.
You must educate yourself and not depend on somebody to tell you, well, here are your treatment options, because no doctor is going to have all the treatment options for you. You have to understand what's available to you and make suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said the best doctors you can have are those which are going to take suggestions from you as long as they come from a reliable source.
Correct.
Like the ICA, and implement them mm-hmm. at your suggestion
mm-hmm.
because they're dealing with 1,000 different diseases and they can't know everything there is to know
no.
about IC.
No.
But as long as they take suggestions from a reliable source, that's fabulous.
Good. Good. So we have to educate ourselves to educate our healthcare providers.
Absolutely. And if your doctor isn't going to do that, and if your doctor doesn't acknowledge your symptoms, and if your doctor tells you, you know, you can't possibly have this, or you can't possibly be doing this, or you're imagining it, or this is psychosomatic, then you just leave because he's wrong.
Right. And then call the ICA so that you can find a reputable person, because you've got a list of people that you don't send them to, but people that have had good recommendations, correct?
Yes. And if you have a good doctor, let us know.
Okay.
And we'll invite them to be on the list.
Okay.
You know, we'll ask them to be on the list. And we like to have their permission before we list them. And if they don't want to be on the list, then we won't put them on. And if they do, we'll be happy to put them on. We do send them information. We ask that they read it. We ask that they be up to date. And we go from there. It's not a guarantee, but it's certainly a very, very good guideline.
Okay. So if people want to contact the ICA, how do they do that?
They can call us at 1-800-HELP, like in Paul, ICA, or 1-301-610-5300. Or they can go to our website at www.ichelp.org, or they can email us at icamail@ichelp.org, and the ORG is for org, organization, because we're the only nonprofit organization for IC in the United States and Canada, and that's important because that means we are a nonprofit and we raise funds for research and we ask Congress to do research specifically for interstitial cystitis, and we do a lot of things that we don't sell medications or drugs or anything like that. And we have conferences and webcasts, and we just do a lot of things that the for-profit sites will not do. So we are really the best source
okay.
for help for interstitial cystitis.
All right. We're running out of time, but if people want to hear your podcast, how do they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, and it's at ichelp.org, and they can find the page at ichelp.org/page.as, like in Sam, PX, P like in Paul, ID like in dog, equal 788. Or you can just go to our website, and in the search field, you can type in podcast.
Okay.
And you'll find all our podcasts.
All right. Wonderful. Well, Linda, thank you so much. The time went very quickly, but I'm very glad.
It certainly did.
Yes, I'm very glad that you're willing to do this. And we may have you come back at another time, if that's agreeable with you, to tell us more.
I would be delighted. I would be delighted anytime. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have a loved one that is undergoing treatment for substance abuse or mental illness, you owe it to them and yourself to tune in to One Hour at a Time with host Mary Woods. This compassionate and educational talk show will help you help those that you love by better understanding their condition and their personal recovery process. Tune in every Monday at 12 noon Pacific Time to One Hour at a Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Recovery begins this hour.
Do you know if kidney disease is affecting you? Are your kidneys healthy? You may have kidney disease and not even be aware of it. 26 million people have been affected by kidney disease. Teenagers today are being diagnosed with symptoms such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity. These conditions can worsen kidney health and cause kidney disease.
Be sure to tune in to Improve Your Kidney Health with your host, Dr. Rich Snyder, every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The information you get on this program could help save your life.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today's program is sponsored by the Interstitial Cystitis Association. We talked to Linda Salen about how she copes with IC and manages to work. Now we're going to speak with Dr. Elise Panzera, Director of Nursing Research at Hahnemann University Hospital in Philadelphia. She's a frequent writer and lecturer about IC, overactive bladder, and urinary incontinence. She's going to talk to us about the research that she did concerning disrupted sleep due to interstitial cystitis. Welcome, Elise.
Hello, welcome. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, I am so glad that you are willing to do this because I am one of those people that the IC affects my sleep, and then my sleep affects my IC, so it's a vicious cycle.
Absolutely. I've heard that many times.
Mm-hmm. So you and your colleagues did this study about sleep disruption. And how did you and your colleagues come about to decide to do this research?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I have been in working in clinical practice for many years, seeing women with interstitial cystitis. And I found it so interesting to hear many women complain about how tired they are and how poorly they sleep at night. And I was very frustrated that there were not a lot of answers or not a lot of information that I could give to my clients. And so I took it upon myself to go ahead and take on this challenge and try to find a little bit more information.
Okay, and so did you enlist the help of colleagues, or was this a joint effort? How did that come about?
Yeah, this was, a combination. Since I had a background in treating interstitial cystitis, I enrolled a colleague who had an expertise in sleep so that we could work together, put our minds together, and come up with the ideal study.
Okay, so when you put your mind together, what made you come up with the idea you were only going to study women?
Well, that was a really difficult decision. And boy, we went back and forth a lot. On my side of the fence, I wanted to include everybody with interstitial cystitis so that we could gather as much information as possible. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting is learning more about sleep as I went through this process. I realized that women have very unique characteristics to sleep that are very different than the patterns of sleep in men. One of the things I'm sure we're all familiar with is the hormones estrogen and progesterone. Mm-hmm. And particularly, women sleep differently depending on where they are in their menstrual cycle, right, in their period cycle. Also, women tend to dream more. And women tend to experience chronic pain a lot more often than men. So part of our plan, in order to get the best information possible, was that we were going to include only women for this one study.
Okay. This one study. That doesn't mean the only study.
Right. Well, this one study, and our plan was to eventually include men in a follow-up study.
Oh, okay.
Right? So we needed to, in order to gauge or to identify how well someone sleeps, it's best to look at women separately than men and not combine them together.
Okay. Well, I know for years they never even did drug testing on research for women because of their menstrual cycles. They said it wasn't consistent.
Right,
so
right.
It's nice to hear that we're doing something in particular for women, not excluding men, but just
accepting the differences.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, I know that there are sometimes some frustrations for men with interstitial cystitis because they may feel like they're not getting enough information, because a lot of the studies focus on care for women related to interstitial cystitis. But there was a very clear scientific reason that we wanted to keep the population separate.
Okay. But for the men that are listening to this show, is there hope for them that there will be a follow-up study that's for them?
Absolutely. We are working on a follow-up study that will mimic this exact same study. The same information will be gathered, except it will be exclusively for male IC patients.
Okay. And do you expect there will be some differences between the two studies and the results?
Well, you know, while I think that there is a lot of information out there that we do know, I have a feeling that the relationship of sleep and their symptoms will be similar. But, you know, the jury is going to be out. We'll have to wait and find out. And that's one of the exciting aspects of doing research.
Right. If you go in with a preconceived hypothesis, you might be very surprised that
right.
it doesn't turn out the way you expected.
Exactly, exactly. So while I think that it will be similar, we'll wait and see. We'll find out, hopefully in the next year.
Yeah, there might be intervening variables that you didn't even think about.
Absolutely, absolutely. And how fascinating would that be?
Yes, yes. And there's all kinds of questions that I would come up with, like, okay, are we going to measure them comparatively like age categories? Are we going to measure them comparatively on pain intensities?
I mean, there's a lot of
comparative studies, or are they going to be totally separate and different?
Right, right. There's a lot of ways that you can break out the information, which is again, so interesting.
And I'm sure this will then fuel the idea for further research.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one thing that I found very surprising, that in all of the research that I had done, you know, meaning going back into all the articles and all the medical journals, there were a lot of publications about sleep and urinary conditions or sleep and chronic pain conditions, but none of them looked at sleep and interstitial cystitis. So, I wondered, you know, what would be the outcome? What would be fine?
Well, can you tell our listeners what kinds of conditions can affect sleep?
Well, there are so many conditions that can affect sleep. Of course, any type of condition that requires that you need to wake up in the middle of the night. So we're talking about urologic conditions like overactive bladder, maybe men who have enlarged prostates, have nocturia, which is that, you know, the term we use when people get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, because maybe they don't feel like they are emptying their bladder all the way. And
right.
of course, there are lots of conditions, lots of pain conditions as well, fibromyalgia, chronic pain, arthritis, as well as a lot of studies that have been done in, terminal diseases such as cancer and things like that. So at least the medical information is leading us to the idea that almost every medical condition has some impact on sleep properties.
And it doesn't even include the fact that some of these people might be parents of small children, who that disrupts their sleep on top of all the other conditions.
Right, absolutely. This only takes into account how their medical condition, whatever it might be, affects their sleep.
And other factors could be where you live, the noise factor,
right.
the temperature factor, the environment.
Absolutely.
And all
your bed partner.
Yeah.
Right. There are a lot of variables.
And it's hard to make them all exclusive of one another.
Right.
To just, you know, measure one thing without it being affected by something else. That's really difficult to do.
Right, absolutely.
And for our audience, they may not know that just because you start with a sample of, we'll guess, like 200 people, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to use all of those 200 people.
Right, right, absolutely. One thing I was very lucky that, you know, together with the help of the ICA, this was an internet study. So questionnaires and data or information was collected online, right, through, through an internet service. And the interstitial cystitis actually sent out an invitation asking for participants, if they met a certain criteria, would they be willing to take a survey? And quite to my surprise, we received over 1,500 people that wanted to participate in this study in just a week's period of time. Now, while this is my own thought, is that this huge response really let me know in my heart that this was a real pertinent question and that there were a lot of people that wanted to get information on this.
Well, that's good that you had such a willing participation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, did these people get the results of the study, or did they have to say if they wanted to have the results?
Actually, some people said that they wanted the results personally, so I sent them a copy of the article that was written about it, but also it was put on the ICA website so that people are able to access it. So whether you participated or not, you are allowed to, or you are able to view the results.
Okay. And what's the name of the study for people that want to go look it up?
Okay. It is called Sleep Disruption and Interstitial Cystitis Symptoms in Women.
And it was published in the Urological Nursing
Journal,
correct?
Correct. Okay. And you can also find a copy of it on their website as well.
And this was just in May and June of this year, so it's really recent.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, so that means the information is very up to date.
Right. And it is still available. So anybody who's listening, if they're interested in looking over the information, they can go to the websites and it will still be there today.
Okay. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about this interesting topic.
Okay. Thank you.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have a loved one that is undergoing treatment for substance abuse or mental illness, you owe it to them and yourself to tune in to One Hour at a Time with host Mary Woods. This compassionate and educational talk show will help you help those that you love by better understanding their condition and their personal recovery process. Tune in every Monday at 12 noon Pacific time to One Hour at a Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Recovery begins this hour.
What if you could get the information that you've always needed from a good friend? If you don't know her already, you'll want to meet Janet Zapala. Janet is an accomplished radio and television personality who now brings her experience and a wealth of guests to VoiceAmerica.com. We'll feature discussions about food and drink, nutrition, lifestyles, and fitness, just to name a few. We'll talk about current events and what you want to hear about, too. The show is called Food for Thought. Tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today's program is sponsored by the Interstitial Cystitis Association. If you want more information, you can go to www.ichelp.org. Dr. Elise Panzera is talking to us about her research about sleep disruption due to interstitial cystitis symptoms. That's a tongue twister. So let's talk about what kinds of conditions. Well, we talked about that. What is your definition of disturbed sleep?
Well, disrupted sleep can refer to a broad range of sleep related problems. This could include maybe not getting enough sleep, or sleep that is of poor quality, or non-restorative, so you're not getting that deep dreaming kind of sleep.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's really interesting that every night we have multiple frequent but brief arousals in our sleep. And most of the time in the morning, we don't even remember them. However, if these brief arousals become very frequent or are interrupted because of or prolonged because of pain or the need to go to the bathroom, all of these qualities can decrease the restorative properties, that really good rest that you need for your mind and your body to recuperate from the day before. These mm-hmm. qualities are decreased.
Uh-huh. I can relate to that, because on top of having the IC and the pain, having the sleep apnea, so the bladder wakes you up, you quit breathing, then you have an hour and a half worth of sleep, then you go back to sleep, you dream, you wake up an hour and a half later, and you just feel like all night long, you're just up and down and up and down.
Right, right, and those frequent awakenings will decrease that quality of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So although you may sleep for 8 hours, you may mm-hmm. feel not rested in the morning
yes.
when you wake up.
Yes, and I don't know if you can answer this, but what are the neurotransmitters and things that would be replenished while we're sleeping if we got the restorative sleep?
Well, from what I understand is that almost every aspect of the body is recharged in the middle of the night. So
okay.
everything from our pain receptors to our thought processes are able to be rested and ready to take on in the new day. When we lack that sleep, what has been another very interesting finding, you know, in literature or in studies that other people have done, is the lack of sleep actually will make you more sensitive to pain. So, by not sleeping well, not having that deep REM sleep because of frequent awakenings, like from maybe nocturia, right, getting up in the middle of the night,
right.
or pain, then the next day you are actually even more sensitive to pain than you were the day before.
Uh-huh. And so you're going to sleep less the next night because you're in so much pain you can't relax and go to sleep.
Absolutely. It becomes this vicious cycle.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Without a doubt.
And then if you try to take certain medications to help with the pain,
right.
they might help with the pain, but then they're going to wear off, or they have the side effects.
Exactly.
Or the anticholinergics kinds of things that dries out your mouth and makes you constipated. So.
Right, right. And those lead to other side effects. But also what's interesting is that, you know, as healthcare providers, quite frequently, you know, we might be lenient with giving people with chronic pain either sleep medicine or pain medicine to take in the middle of the night so that they do get quote-unquote, maybe quality sleep. But
yes.
What we've found also is that those medications, while they put you to sleep, and absolutely, some sleep is better than nothing, but it
uh-huh.
also interferes with your dreaming and being able to make it down to that REM sleep. So although you may be sleeping, it's much more of a lighter sleep state, not
yes.
as restorative, not as, you know, you're not getting the full benefits.
Right, I call that my twilight sleep.
Right, absolutely. And sure, it is much better than no sleep at all, but it's not an alternative for natural sleep.
And what can happen is that then you can nod off while you're supposed to be at work or when you're sitting at a traffic light, and it can be very hazardous to your health.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. You know, women with interstitial cystitis quite frequently complained of daytime fatigue, lack of daytime functioning, you know, lack of quality of life because they felt so sleepy that if they closed their eyes for a few minutes, they were afraid they would fall asleep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then for me, you wake up just a few minutes later. It's like you jerk awake because, oops, you know, that's all I get for the sleep nap this time.
Right, right. And again, not that restorative sleep that our bodies are looking for.
So of the 3 million estimated women that have IC, what percentage do you believe have disrupted sleep?
Well, what I can tell you is that from the study that we did, that 100% of the participants had problems with sleeping. And that was quite surprising. I thought it would be high, but, you know, we were able to tap into a population that had quite a high level of poor sleep, if I dare put it that way. But I really do think that within the IC population, there is a significant number of both men and women who are having problems sleeping because of their pain, their frequency, their getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. And what we don't know is those who are not having the sleep problem, did they not wish to participate in the study? So you don't know if you can generalize this
Absolutely.
To the general population.
Absolutely.
I'd be interested to see what your men's study shows.
Right, right. And that will just help us to get more information to come up with good strategies to help people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What was your general purpose of doing this study?
Well, you know, as a healthcare provider, it was very frustrating not having options for my clients that I would see. And so ultimately, not only did I want to find out, was this a problem? Because anecdotally or within my patient population, I heard of people complain about this problem all the time, but yet nothing was supported in the medical or nursing literature. So I wanted to find out, you know, whether this was a problem. And then ultimately, I wanted to find out or help people to identify, nurses or physicians to identify ways of screening people to ask a couple of questions to be able to identify whether or not they could have a sleep problem and hopefully get it addressed.
Okay. And do you think you accomplished that with your study?
I think so. I think so. There was quite a great amount of information. So particularly the symptoms, the interstitial cystitis symptoms related to poor sleep were nocturia, pain, mm-hmm. and urgency. So again, not a huge surprise. But by asking some of these questions by the nurses or the nursing assistants who might be completing the intake when patients are being seen by their healthcare providers, this should hopefully open up the awareness for healthcare providers to be able to start a dialogue about how well they may be sleeping.
Okay. And what can be done
disrupted sleep? Right. Well, one of the things that we found was in the sleep study that we did, we used a tool, it's a questionnaire, and one of the questions we asked was, how long do people lay awake in bed at night before falling asleep? Mm-hmm. Okay? And this information was particularly high in the interstitial cystitis population, meaning that it took much longer than normal from when they hit the pillow until when they perceived that they fell asleep. This result is the exact definition of insomnia.
Oh, okay.
So women with interstitial cystitis, like people with insomnia, spend a lot of time in bed not sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And really, you know, between their symptoms of pain or getting up to go to the bathroom, sometimes bed becomes not a very pleasant place.
Yes.
Almost where you are lying in bed and have a little anxiety, well, am I going to sleep tonight? And, you know, looking at the clock and say, oh, if I go to sleep now, okay, I'll have 6 hours of sleep. If I go to sleep now, it'll be 5 hours. So so the bed becomes associated with not a pleasant place and not sleeping.
Okay.
Quite similar,
Elise,
with insomnia.
Elise,
yes.
Can you sum up in two sentences what hope you have for IC patients?
I hope that women will look at some information about sleep hygiene techniques in order to review some of these habits so that every woman gets a good night's sleep because they deserve it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Elise, very much for being my guest today. And if they want more information, they can go to the IC website and look up your article, and I'll have them contact me if they want more information from you. How about that?
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, now it's time to wrap up today's show. Did you hear anything that resonated with your symptoms today? Do you suffer from insomnia due to bladder symptoms or pain? Do you want more information? Go to ichelp.org. You can go to my website, www.thedrmelanieshow.com. You can listen to any of the past shows that I've had, and please share them with other people. Next week, we're going to be looking at Victory Over ADHD with Deborah Merlin. We're also going to speak with Dan Tuohy, massage therapist and access consciousness facilitator. Remember, to help yourself, help someone else. Until next week, goodbye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.